Come on aboard, I promise you. There's lots of room for you on the bandwagon.
Hey there, welcome into another episode of the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. I'm Brian Moline.
I'm John Steinbach.
And alas, we are without Lisa Braltz today. Lisa's out sick, battling some sort of virus thing, and she was kind enough not to share it with us, which we do appreciate. But get well soon, Lisa. We miss having you around here to keep us in line.
Absolutely.
We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk some about international student athletes and kind of how they make the transition from living and playing in Europe or Australia or wherever it may be to coming to the United States to play intercollegiate athletics. And as part of that conversation, we'll talk with Illinois freshman guard Petra Holashinska coming up in just a bit. She was recently named a Big Ten Freshman of the Week for an outstanding performance against Rutgers, I believe.
Yeah, she's really come on in the Big Ten season. She's got a great three-point shot.
Yes, she does indeed. Part of Illinois kind of turning it around a little bit in their women's basketball season. But we'll hear a little bit firsthand about what it was like for her, about the recruiting process, and about what it's been like to transition from living and playing in the Czech Republic to being on the Fighting Illini basketball team here in her freshman season. But first, John, we'll talk a little bit about the week that's been in sports. National Football League playoffs are ongoing.
Well, I mean, we should say it's been, this is our first podcast of 2017.
It is.
So it's been a while. A lot has happened in the world of sport.
Yes, there has been a lot that's happened. NFL playoffs, as we mentioned, as far as University of Illinois, the Illini basketball team on the men's side, not so good, especially last night against Purdue. That was really not a game from the start. And you're hearing, more chatter about coaching change, perhaps.
Yeah, the basketball team. It seems like, unless something really changes here, that seems kind of inevitable. It's unfortunate. I think, personally, I think John Gross seems like a good guy. I don't have any ill will towards him. He obviously makes a lot of money, and this is part of the job. You know, the new AD's mantra is, we will win.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're averaging losing by 24 points on the road in the Big Ten, I don't think that bodes well. I think they'll let the season play out. We'll have to see it is. Generally, Brian, I'm having a little existential crisis.
You are.
About sports now, though, because of the Illini being so bad, this is sort of the time of the year. And, Big Ten basketball this year, actually. There's a Purdue, I guess, is good, and Wisconsin, but it's kind of a, teams. I can't get excited about Duke or Kentucky. And then we've talked about this frequently, about the sort of declining interest for some people, football. And I'm finding that, I watched the national championship game, college championship game, maybe the most exciting one in recent memory, very exciting game. I turned it off after the third quarter.
I didn't watch it. I didn't watch it at all.
So I don't know, the Cubs won the World Series, and that was great. And then it's like all the other sports. Bulls are kind of blah. The Blackhawks seem good, but honestly, I'm someone who starts following hockey during the playoffs just because then I can only watch that kind of thing. So I just need to find some more sports to get into, I guess.
Too bad there's no Winter Olympics this year.
Yeah.
It seems like it'd be a good time just to kind of revive everybody from the doldrums,
so to speak. That January doldrums. Hey, sorry about your Cowboys.
Yeah, that was tough. I wanted to know something funny. I didn't watch any of that game.
Oh, wow.
I did listen to a good chunk of it on my phone while I was doing some stuff around the house. I do have to say I really like Brad Sham, the Cowboys play-by-play announcer. I think he's really good.
On the radio, yeah.
So I was listening to that broadcast while I did some stuff around the house, and Aaron Bleeping Rodgers, man, that guy.
Yeah, he's pretty good. He's pretty good at football.
Yeah, he does all right. So Green Bay playing Atlanta this week in one playoff game. And New England and Pittsburgh, boy, somebody different in the AFC, huh? New England and Pittsburgh playing to see who goes to the Super Bowl. I am kind of hoping Atlanta wins just so there's somebody, at least someone fairly new, different.
Right.
you know, to make the Super Bowl. So I can really root for somebody.
Right, but I guarantee the NFL is rooting for Green Bay, New England, Pittsburgh too.
Yeah, Pittsburgh. They don't really care who wins the AFC.
They want Green Bay.
Yeah, they do. They do, unfortunately. All right, so let's talk a little bit about, you know, international student athletes, John, and how they try to make that transition, because it has to be a difficult one, I would think. You know, you're not only, you know, I don't know about you, for me, the transition from high school to college had its challenges anyway. I was away from home for really the first extended period of my life. I went to a school where I really didn't know anybody, so it was, you had all of those dynamics. Mm-hmm. Then add on to that, you know, being in a foreign country and not speaking your native language while you're going to school and playing intercollegiate athletics, right. I would imagine it's got to be fairly challenging.
Yeah, I think it is probably very challenging. And I know, especially in this day and age, well, taking a bigger step back, I think we should say that obviously international students have been playing college athletics for a long time. But it seems to be increasing, especially in what you might call the sort of the money sports, which are, you know, college basketball, men's and women's, and college football, which is kind of surprising considering the lack of popularity of American football outside of really the U.S. Mm-hmm. But some of the off sports, I did a little research, and I think even in the 90s, there was a lot of complaints, even by Carl Lewis, that U.S. Track and field teams are becoming dominated by Europeans and folks like that, but it seems to be even growing. And I think I saw that number of foreign-born prospects on college rosters is up 40% in the last 10 years. And I think if you follow women's college basketball or men's college basketball, you're starting seeing more European type names. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I think the transition is hard, especially because most colleges require you to take the SAT or ACT, which mm-hmm. Is very different than what happens in Europe, I believe. I'm not an expert on European transition to college, but I know it's very different. So, I think – but what you're seeing is college coaches realizing that there's talent elsewhere. Those people mm-hmm. want to come to the U.S. For men's college basketball, I think the reasons, as far as I can see, are obviously you're going to get more scouts from the NBA in men's college basketball. Certainly, they go to Europe and check that out, but it's obviously huge here. And then for both men's and women's, I think what we've seen is used to be in Europe in college basketball, they would do like they do in soccer. Or in professional basketball, they would do what they do in soccer and try and sign you to like a 15-year development contract when you're like 15 or something. But apparently the money isn't there. And what a lot of these players have realized is if you – in Europe with soccer and basketball, if you get signed up on one of these contracts, you're basically setting your education aside. It's a full-time job. You're expected to – devote all your time to soccer, so basically you have no time to get a degree. Mm-hmm. If you go the college route, there's not really a lot of athletics. It's very minor compared to the U.S. So if you want to get a degree on the off chance that you don't become a successful athlete but also increase your chances of becoming a player, the U.S. is the way to go as far as I can tell. But
yeah. Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, as far as Illinois goes, you know, thinking about foreign-born players who have been at the University of Illinois, the one that I think of when I think of Illinois goes way back to Lou Henson days, Jens Kuljava. And if I remember correctly, you know, Lou Henson saw him when Illinois made a European basketball trip, you know, many years ago back in the 1980s.
Right. I mean, I think that's still – it happens, and I read this, and maybe Petra will mention it later, is that she met Matt Bolan when they were over there, when he was over there checking someone else out for, like, the under-17 World Championships. I've read mm-hmm. that now that these younger under-17 World Championships have become more popular, more coaches are checking those out. I know John Calipari was recently in Spain, maybe last summer, checking out the U-17 World Championship. So that's a great chance for a spotlight. Yeah, Illinois, they've recruited a lot of international players who have Now, what you also see is international players coming over here to play high school basketball.
Robert Archibald.
I remember back in the 80s, where I grew up, Kankakee Community College had a really outstanding. They were like the junior college championships in basketball for like 10 straight years. They had a player named Andy Petty, who mm-hmm. was from Africa, who I think came over to play specifically to try and make college basketball. So he played at KCC and then ended up playing a couple of years here. That's a way a lot of do it. And we should point out, when you look around the University of Illinois in general, I think we're second or third most international campus. But as far as sports go, it's the same kind of thing. Once you get out of the sort of major sports, I think outside of Petra on the women's team, there was not really any...
Nobody on the men's team, but on the men's basketball team. But what you do have, for instance, in golf recently, you had Thomas Peters from the University of Illinois men's golf team, who was recently on the team and has become a very good player on the European professional golf tour.
They currently have another guy from Belgium called Thomas Dietrich, and then they actually have a guy from Italy whose name I don't want to pronounce.
Yeah, Giovanni Tadiotto from Belgium right now is on the team.
And I noticed the men's and women's tennis rosters have quite a few people born outside the U.S. Canada, of course, is a popular location, and Australia seems to be huge for basketball.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, more and more you're seeing, it's crazy that the University of Illinois has their women's tennis team has someone from, Bogota, Colombia. So,
oh, and how could we did forget one player on the women's basketball team. Jaylen Kirkpatrick is a sophomore. She's from Ontario, Canada.
Oh, right, yeah.
No language barrier there other than the occasional A that the Canadians
Well, my daughter is Canadian. She was born in Ontario as well. So, I wonder if someday she grows up if we can count her as a international student. But.
Yeah, because what would her hometown be considered, Toronto, or would her hometown be Champaign?
That's a debate for another day. I think hometown is where you grew up, right?
Not I think
born.
So. I think so. Yeah. So.
Anyway. But it's a growing trend, and like we mentioned, there's more opportunities for coaches to go to a central location to see these tournaments. Like in the U.S., you have obviously AAU tournaments where players go, but now you have international tournaments both on men's and women's side. Obviously YouTube and stuff like that. There's also I don't want to take up too much more time. We should get to talking to Petra, but I looked a little bit, and there's all kinds of international websites devoted to helping international players get into U.S. schools, get recruited. I'm sure not all of them are of the highest repute. I'm sure there's a...
Much like anything like that.
Yeah. But I'm sure a few of them are good. And then I read a little bit about Gonzaga in the U.S. and men's basketball has been big on international players for a long time. And apparently, it's for them, it's just they have one assistant coach who is really dialed into Europe, has a lot of connections, makes some calls a couple times a year, gets a couple names, then maybe makes a trip at a good time and goes and checks it out. Especially with men's basketball as opposed to women's, there's a lot of money in it. So, getting those players is important. Just one note, I also noticed, sorry, I'm kind of rambling here, college football has a lot of international players, and it seemed like obviously Samoa is a big, mm-hmm. big feeder to the NFL, but Nigeria seems like there's a lot of players in the NFL from Nigeria, and a lot of them are playing college football, and that would be something to look into. I didn't have time to investigate that, but that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, very interesting indeed. So anyway, that's just a little overview of some of the issues facing international student athletes as they make the transition to playing collegiately here in the United States. Up next, we will talk to one of those athletes making that transition as Illinois freshman guard Petra Holoshinska will join us on the phone from Minnesota, where the Illini are getting ready to take on the Minnesota Golden Gophers. That conversation coming up in just a moment here on The Bandwagon. And I'm Brian Moline, along with John Steinbacher. Just the two of us today as Lisa Brault is out sick.
Just the two of us. We can make it if we try.
Just the two of us.
Just the and I.
And on the bandwagon today, we're talking a little bit about international student athletes and how they make that transition from playing overseas to playing here in the United States. And pleased to be joined right now on the phone by Petra Holashinska. She's a freshman guard for the University of Illinois basketball team. She joins us on the phone from Minneapolis, where the Illinois team is getting set to play Minnesota tonight. Petra, thanks for joining us today.
No problem.
If you could, just tell us a little bit about the season so far. It looks like there's been some ups and downs, but it looks like things are kind of on the upswing for the Illini.
Yeah, I think it's good. We play really well at home, which is really important for us, but I think we should improve our games on the road.
Yeah, you've got a big road game tonight at Minnesota. As you kind of look ahead to the game here tonight, what do you think some keys are maybe to maintain some of that success you've had at home?
So we definitely have to stop their best player, number 33, which is like she scores like 20 points per game. So we have to stop her, and I think we could win this game.
And Petra, I guess from our perspective, we're curious about how you found out about the University of Illinois. Of course, you were a prominent basketball player in the Czech Republic, but how did you find out about the University of Illinois?
Well, I played in the Under-17 World Championship in the Czech Republic 3 years ago, and Coach Blan went there to watch Jalen Kirkpatrick, and he also watched our game. So then he contacted me, and I visited the campus last December.
Very good. And I think I heard somewhere, had you played basketball at all with Jenna Smith, former Illini player?
Yeah, we played together I think it was 3 years ago. Yeah.
Okay, very good.
What was it like when you came over, sort of the recruitment process when you came to Illinois? What was that like for you? Was that your first time in the U.S.?
Yeah, it's my first time here.
And was this the only university in Illinois, was this the only university in the U.S. that recruited you?
No, I had more universities, but Illinois was like my number one, so I wanted to visit Illinois first and then decide.
And what did you think of the university in Champaign when you first came over?
Yeah, I loved it. I loved the coaching staff and also the teammates, so it was great to be here.
One quick question for you. If I've noticed you said that your goal is to play in Europe after you graduate. Why come to the U.S. to play basketball rather than stay in Europe and play there for a few more years? Why is it better to play here and then go back?
Well, I feel like the connection between basketball and school here is better than back home. So you can, like, study here whatever you want. But if I was in Czech, I would have to study, like, sports management or something with sport, because it's really hard to play professional basketball and study at the same time.
And what's been the most difficult part for you in the transition from living and playing basketball in the Czech Republic to being here in the United States? What's been the most difficult part of that transition?
I think probably lifting, because we didn't lift back home, so it was really hard for me.
Getting stronger now?
Yeah, hopefully.
And when you first came here, is there an international studies person that helps you out? I mean, how does that work just from being international? Do you get is there someone special from the international studies department to help out, or?
Well, I'm pretty sure there are, but, like, we have our own academic advisor, and he helped me a lot.
Okay. So but he didn't particularly have any specialty in international. He's just assigned to the team. Okay.
I guess as far as academics go, what are you studying here at Illinois?
I'm undeclared, but I want to study business.
Okay. Any ideas on what you'd like to do with that degree afterward?
I don't know. I would like to use my English and math, so probably something with that.
And if you could, tell us a little bit about what professional basketball is like for women in Europe right now. From what I understand, there are quite a few opportunities to play professionally over there.
Yeah, there are. But, like, it depends on the country where you play. You know, I played in Czech Republic. I feel like the league got worse in the past few years. So I feel like the best leagues are in France, Spain, maybe Italy. It really depends on the country.
Sure. Any aspirations to see if you could maybe get to the WNBA here in the United States?
Well, we'll see. It's kind of far.
Sure. Back to this this Illinois team here for just a minute. You've got a lot of young players on the team. I think three freshmen and a sophomore in the starting lineup, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Has that made it maybe a little more difficult to put everything together here early in the season?
Yeah, I think it was difficult at the beginning, and we didn't play well. But I feel like it's getting better. You know, we have a really good point guard, Brandy Beasley, and Alex is doing a great job. So I think it's getting better.
All right. To Petra Holashinska, freshman from the University of Illinois women's basketball team. They're getting ready for a game tonight at Minnesota. Petra, thank you so much for your time, and best of luck tonight against the Gophers.
Thank you.
And thanks again to Petra Holashinska for joining us today, as she's got a game tonight as we record this on Wednesday.
Yeah, we'll have to
see
how she does. She's, as we mentioned, she's seems to be improving as the season goes along. So hopefully a bright future for her. And, you know, the University of Illinois women's team, we talked off mic about how big of a hit they had losing Shatrice White last year. But they seem to have a lot of talent coming in this year, and then a pretty good recruiting class next year. So I wouldn't have thought I would say this, but it looks like the arrow is maybe pointing up a little better for them than the men's basketball team right now, at least this year. Obviously, the men's basketball team has a pretty nice recruiting class next year as well.
Yeah. All right. So thanks again to Petra. It's now rivalry time.
And
let's be honest here, John.
It was supposed to be Lisa.
It was. With Lisa out sick, we've had to scramble and come up with a rivalry on our own. And I think we got a pretty good one.
Oh, we got one of the best of all time.
And sticking with some conversation about women's college basketball, I don't think there's been any better rivalry in women's college basketball than Tennessee and UConn, particularly at its peak,
right,
with Gino Auriemma coaching Connecticut, the late, great Pat Summitt coaching Tennessee.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate now because, you know, as we've seen recently with Tennessee just isn't the same team it was under Pat Summitt for obvious reasons. She's one of the greatest coaches in probably any sport of all time. You know, you've seen now Connecticut just become basically the de facto all-star team in women's college basketball. They just recently broke their own record for winning 91 straight games.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was great when there was at least two great women's basketball programs, and so many great games and rivalries. And it just, you know, not to be whatever, but you had Pat Summitt, who basically, you know, created women's college basketball program at Tennessee, and I don't probably know as much about her as I should, but it was just nice. There was a nice dichotomy there that, you know, Tennessee's kind of middle of America, not really salt of the earth, but, you know, you have a woman in a dominant women's program, then you have, like, Gino from Connecticut, and, you know, Connecticut's
ESPN country,
and you know he is he's a man coaching a women's sport, and we've talked about that a little bit. But I do think the fact that one was a woman and one was a man just makes it more interesting for, you know, optics or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, and just looking at the series over the years, you know, Connecticut has the edge in the series overall, 13-9. The two teams, at least according to what I'm looking at here, have not played since 2007. And this was the surprising thing to me. Tennessee won the last three meetings in the series. They met in the regular season in 2005, 2006, and 2007. Tennessee won all three of those meetings, all fairly close games. But I think that where the rivalry really took off was when, you know, Connecticut had started becoming good in the early to mid-1990s, mm-hmm. like with Rebecca Lobo, was the first real prominent player on those teams. And Connecticut scheduled Tennessee in Storrs, Connecticut, on their home court, and won the first ever meeting between the two teams. And I think that's really kind of what ignited this whole thing. Later that year, Connecticut won their first national championship, and then kind of the rivalry was on after that. And it went back and forth for a few years, and then Connecticut had a run where they won six straight in the series, including two national championship games in that run. You know, Tennessee kind of struck back with Candace Parker in that era.
Right.
And that was kind of, I think, Pat Summitt's really last great team was with Candace Parker.
Now, so they only played in the national championship game twice, is that what you're saying?
Three times overall.
And Tennessee won?
Actually, they played in the national championship game four times. Connecticut won all four of those meetings.
Oh, wow.
That was over a 10-year period.
Mm-hmm.
They played two other times in the NCAA tournaments, three other times earlier. Once in the Final Four, Tennessee won in 96. In the Elite Eight, Tennessee won in 97. And then in the Final Four, UConn won in 2002.
All right, so you would have to say overall, probably UConn got the best of Tennessee if they won all four.
Yeah, all four national championship games, yeah.
Still a good rivalry.
Yeah, very good rivalry. And, you know, the coaches, different styles, you know, I think, you know, they're both intense, certainly in their own way, but Geno's kind of always been that outgoing, brash kind of personality, like in press conferences and everything else. You know, Pat Summitt just so intense is what I think of when I think of Pat Summitt, just focused intensity on the game of college basketball. And I think there's no question that those two, however you want to rank them, are the two greatest coaches in women's college basketball history.
Sure. And, you know, obviously Geno's still going, so.
Yeah.
Would be unfair to rank him until they win another 280 straight games or something like that. Yeah, no, that's a great rivalry and a good chance to remember Pat Summitt, who obviously was a huge influence on all college sports.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's our rivalry for this week, Tennessee and UConn in women's college basketball. Now it's time for a little status update. What's caught our eye on social media this week? John, what do you have for us?
Well, probably a lot of folks out there. Well, I don't know. LA football. It's exciting. They have the Rams, and now they're getting the Chargers, apparently.
Huh.
I don't know if you saw this, but the Chargers unleashed a logo onto the world. Recently, is basically the word LA, that's all it is stark blue, and then LA in white, and then LA, the L in LA is like a lightning bolt. It basically looks a lot like the Dodgers. I'm not going to lie, it looks a lot like the Dodgers logo. What was funny is that the Tampa Bay Lightning social media person sent out a funny tweet as soon as they went out and basically made a joke about the Lightning logo and the Dodgers logo maybe getting together and having an offspring and that being this logo. But yeah, it came out, got booed by the fans, mocked all over social media. I think basically 3 days after it was launched, they took it back and said, this is no longer our logo. Back to the drawing board. So if things aren't off to a great start there for the Chargers in L.A., the whole football teams in L.A. moving thing is something else. But I thought it was pretty amusing.
Something else that caught my eye here in the last day, I think this happens once in a while. I don't think it's totally uncommon, but this has been getting a lot of play on Twitter the last day or so. University of Connecticut in football has been taking a lot of heat because they had extended a scholarship offer to a high school football player from New Jersey.
Oh, yeah.
And they pulled the scholarship offer at the last minute because apparently they found somebody better. Now, I find this interesting that UConn is getting all this heat. Not that I don't think what they're doing is kind of shady and definitely
people
not.
People do that all the time, don't they?
Especially in the SEC, like Alabama and you know,
is it
some
because
of those.
UConn just isn't a football powerhouse, so they think like you can't do that unless you're Nick Saban?
Yeah, I don't. I'm trying to figure out exactly why this is getting so much play because, again, I don't think it's good what UConn's doing here, but I don't think it's that unusual. Story from the Washington Post about it. It's a young man named Ryan Dickens. He's from New Jersey, as I said. He's a 6'2", 210-pound linebacker. He verbally committed to Connecticut 7 months ago. then in the off season, this might be part of why it's getting play. In the off season, UConn fired its coach to rehire Randy Edsall, who had coached them before several years ago, and then Edsall had gone on to coach Maryland before getting fired there. So apparently, Edsall told this guy's high school coach that he changed his mind about the scholarship offer during an awards banquet on Sunday night. UConn has not commented on this. And that's why I think they're kind of using this just to highlight the issue of scholarships getting pulled like this.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Apparently Edsall has a little bit of a history on this. There was a player named Dimitri McGill who had committed to play at Maryland while Edsall was the coach there. And in 2013, Edsall rescinded the scholarship offer to this kid 3 weeks before signing day. The excuse Edsall gave in that situation was knee pain that McGill had experienced while playing high school football. So it ended well, at least for McGill, the player in 2013. He signed with East Carolina and says he's moved on from that situation. But I think part of the reason this is getting some attention is, you know, Edsall has a little bit of a history. I think part of it is that this high school player's mom has kind of gone public with this.
I see.
That's probably something that might be different than from other situations as well.
Yeah, I just know that, like, especially in the Big Ten, Tom Crean, I don't think he's done it recently, but he's done that a couple of times.
Yeah.
In fact,
yeah.
I looked up on the Urban Dictionary, there's a definition for creaning.
Yeah.
Which is the practice of pulling scholarships from a college athlete in order to open up a scholarship for a more highly valued recruit.
Mm. Yeah, that's. I remember that when Crean first took over, because let's be honest, Indiana was bad when
right.
they first took over. So Crean had some guys on scholarship, and the way that those scholarships technically work, or at least they did at the time, was that they're renewed each year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was at least one instance where, you know, Crean told a guy at the end of the season, "Sorry, we're not going to need you on scholarship next year."
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I get it. You know, I don't. I think it's a terrible thing, and maybe you shouldn't be able to do it, obviously. But then, you know, you also look at, like you said, he came in with a bad program and especially expected to turn it around. It's a high pressure stuff. Look at what we talked about, U of I.
Yeah, and speaking of that, Tom Crean might be a little bit on the hot seat in Indiana. It sounds like this year, because their season, although they've got some big wins, they've also
right.
got some pretty bad losses, and there's a little bit of doubt as to whether Indiana might make the NCAA tournament.
Well, I hope he sticks around, because he's my favorite coach in the college basketball to not like.
Yeah, stalking just, around on the sideline with his Diet Coke.
Yeah, pulling up his pants. He's just a weird guy. I love it. It's, you know,
the coach that John Steinbacher loves to hate.
So the weirder the coach on the opposing team, the better.
Very good. Well, John, I think that's going to wrap things up on this edition of The Bandwagon. A little bit shorter than usual.
Well, I mean, Lisa's is a good portion of. I don't want to say this without sounding terrible. She's just a great contributor.
She adds
to
a lot
podcast.
To the show.
Yeah, obviously.
And one thing that she is going to add to the show even today is our closing credits, because neither you nor I have ever written them or remember them. So we're going to leave that bit of business to the one.
Well,
the only.
We want to thank Lisa Braltz for sure for doing the credits today.
Yes. Thank you very much for that, Lisa. And go.
Today's Bandwagon podcast was produced by Brian Moline, Lisa Braltz, and John Steinbacher. There are other people who have helped make Bandwagon the entity that you are hearing every so often, despite the odds. Scott Cameron, Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, Taylor Judd, the band REM, and you. Especially you, listeners. You can find us on the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon, where we link to almost everything we discuss here, if we can remember it. That includes video, audio. You can also subscribe to this podcast and rate it in iTunes. Rating us really helps people discover the podcast, so help us out. It's not just iTunes either. You can find us pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Bandwagon Podcast. Don't put any vowels in there or you're going to be following something else entirely. To get our most recent thoughts on stuff. And we do all have our own Twitter accounts too, so you can follow us there if you want to as well. If you're feeling good about Bandwagon and our home station, Illinois Public Media, throw us a bone at willpledge.org, why don't you? And mention us in the comments. And again, thanks for listening.